In the summer of 1998, I visited the Austrian physicist Anton Zeilinger's laboratory at the University of Innsbruck. Anton showed me an instrument that allows one to view an ionized single atom. Try as I might, though, I simply could not see it. Perhaps my karma wasn't ripe enough to enjoy the spectacle. I first met Anton when he came to a Mind and Life conference in Dharamsala in 1997. In some ways, he's the opposite of David Bohm, the big man with a beard and glasses, a terrific sense of humor and full-bodied laugh. As an experimental physicist, he is remarkably open to any possible reformulation of the theoretical issues in light of the latest experimental results. His interest in a dialogue with Buddhism is in comparing theories of knowledge, quantum physics, and Buddhism, because as he sees it, they both reject any notion of independent objective reality. It was at this time, too, that I met the American physicist Arthur Zients. Arthur, who is quite soft-spoken and has piercing eyes, especially when he's dwelling deeply on a point, is a gifted teacher with the ability to make even the most complicated topics clear. As a moderator, Arthur would summarize and recapitulate arguments most succinctly, which was very helpful to me. Several years before, I'd been fortunate to visit the Niels Bohr Institute in Copenhagen to participate in an informal dialogue. A few days prior to this visit, during a brief stay in London, I had David Bohm and his wife to lunch in my hotel suite. Since I had told him that I was going to attend a dialogue on physics and Buddhist philosophy at the Bohr Institute, Bohm kindly brought me Niels Bohr's own two-page summary of his philosophical views on the nature of reality. It was fascinating to hear Bohm's account of Bohr's planetary model of the atom and Rutherford's model of the atom as a nucleus with orbiting electrons, both reactions to the plum pudding model. The plum pudding model had arisen at the end of the 19th century after J.J. Thomson discovered the negatively charged electron. It was assumed that the positive charge that balanced the electron's negative charge was spread through the atom like a pudding, in which the electrons were plums. In the early 20th century, Ernest Rutherford discovered that when positively charged alpha particles were fired at a gold film, most passed through, but some bounced back. He correctly concluded that the positive charge of the gold atoms could not be spread through the atoms like a pudding, but must be concentrated at their centers. When an alpha particle collided with the center of a gold atom, the positive charge was sufficient to repulse it. From this, Rutherford formulated the solar system model of the atom, with a positively charged nucleus orbited by negative electrons. Niels Bohr was later to refine Rutherford's model with a planetary model of the atom that was in many ways the ancestor of quantum mechanics. In our conversation, Bohm also gave me a glimpse of the long-standing debate between Bohr and Einstein on the interpretation of quantum physics. The essence of this argument revolves around Einstein's refusal to accept the validity of the uncertainty principle. At the heart of the debate is the issue of whether reality, at the fundamental level, is indeterminate, unpredictable, and probabilistic. Einstein was deeply opposed to this possibility, as it reflected in his famous exclamation, "God does not play dice." All this reminded me of the history of my own Buddhist tradition, where debate has played a crucial role in the formation and refinement of many philosophical ideas. Unlike the early Buddhist theorists, modern physicists can hugely enhance the power of their eyes through scientific instruments, like giant telescopes such as the Hubble telescope, or through electron microscopes. The result is an empirical knowledge of material objects that far surpasses even the imagination of ancient times. In view of this capability, I have made a strong case on several occasions for the introduction of basic physics into the studies of the Tibetan monastic colleges. I argued that we would not in fact be introducing a new subject, rather we would be updating an inherent part of the curriculum. I am happy that the academic monastic colleges now hold regular workshops on modern physics. These workshops are run by physics professors and some of their senior graduate students from Western universities. I hope that this initiative will ultimately result in the full entry of modern physics into the regular philosophical curriculum in Tibetan monasteries.